so I said, well, let's go to the UCLA football game tomorrow. That's it. Mm-hmm. So we were married a few months later here, and not in Los Angeles, but I could only get a week off, so we went to Carson City, Nevada. We were married there, and we rushed back to Seattle so my mother could give us the traditional wedding banquet, and then we've been married since.
Mm-hmm. And you have two daughters
and
a son?
We have two daughters and one son.
Right. Do you think that American-born Chinese place any stress or any preference on having sons too, as the older generation?
No, I think our generation did in the beginning, but after the children arrived, and as the women's status rose in this country and the employment and educational opportunities increased, I think there's very little of that today. Although it's really only my own opinion, because it's because we all know how powerful and strong the old Chinese traditions are, and the need for a son to carry on the name is very important to them. I felt that it was important. I was happy when I got a son, but now in my later years, my son had married a Canadian-German girl, and they do not intend to have any children. At least that's what she told me, and I was not frightfully disappointed. I just felt that in view of the problems that people have raising children in today's environment, in view of the teenage problems, I said, well, what does it matter? But I'm happy that I have two grandsons and my daughters. Mm-hmm. I'm not now, when I say that, I'm only saying that it's not so important as to whether you have a male child or a female child. But grandchildren, yes, grandchildren are a joy and a blessing, and no matter what shape, size, or they come, they're the smartest, the brightest, and uh-huh. beautifulest.
uh-huh.
So it's, but I imagine with the traditional Chinese that are more conservative than I am, it's very important.
Uh-huh.
Now we've, with this intermarriage business, we've had friends that, within our own circle, we've seen the breakdown of the traditional Chinese insistence that they marry their own race. We've seen that breaking down slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Not the older generation gives ground grudgingly, let us say, mm-hmm. and then they make the best of it, of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Before the war, did you know of any cases of interracial marriage?
Yes, before the war we knew of some.
How was that viewed by Chinese?
Well, we knew of isolated cases, and it was no big problem then, because you didn't have that much of intermarriage.
Mm-hmm.
But today, practically every family has one or two. The percentage is going that way. Now, I belong to a family group of 25 families called the Chinese Family Fellowship Group. We started it 25 years ago here in Los Angeles. We were all young families, and we were hoping that our children would get to know each other because of our family group activities. We have four activities a year. And since Los Angeles is so scattered, and no two families seem to live in the same area of town, we felt that by starting this group, we would cultivate friendships among our children. Now, 25 years later, out of that whole group, we only have one marriage within the group. And probably over a dozen, at least, intermarriages.
Mm-hmm.
Over a dozen.
Mm-hmm. When was this family fellowship started?
25 years ago.
25 years
in
ago.
The 50s.
And how many families were involved?
There were originally 25 to 30 families.
Uh-huh.
We are no longer active today simply because the children do not care to come to our activities, so we just have one or two older, the original families have one or two meetings a year.
What kinds of activities?
Well, when the children were small, we had Christmas parties where we had puppet shows, we'd rent a hall, we'd have Santa Claus and gifts and songs and so on. At Easter times, we'd have egg hunts, ball games, and all the outdoor sports, potato sack races, everything geared towards the children. And then we'd hire entertainers at different times, and we'd have beach outings. And the children used to attend happily when they were young, but as soon as they hit teenage, it was a very bulky situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually we cut down the activities. And now when we try to have a total family gathering, the response is very poor on the part of the young people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interested in us old fogies. So
who started this family association?
Well, it was started by, we have a lot of transplanted Californians. It was started by Elsie Ho, who's from Honolulu, and Nellie Hong, who's from Portland, and Mary Fung, who's from Pocatello, Idaho, by way of Seattle. And they had young children, and so each of them contacted some of their close friends. And their close friends, in turn, contacted others. And we kept it to about 25 or 30 just to have a working nucleus. And so 25 years later, we've dwindled down to about 15 families that are still interested.
Mm-hmm.
Some have moved away. But the young children are not interested. They attend under command.
So what goes on now?
So now we have very little. We just have one meeting a year, and we try to raise a small sum of money and give it to the Teen Post or some worthy cause,
mm-hmm.
just to get together and see each other's faces.
Mm-hmm.
Although within the group, there are some very close friendships. We see each other all the time.
Mm-hmm. Is it dues collection?
It's a Chinese family fellowship. Only one marriage within the family,
mm-hmm.
all that whole group. And there's probably, I said over a dozen, but well over a dozen intermarriages.
Mm-hmm. Was this family fellowship organized to the extent of having membership dues and officers? And
well, yes, we had officers, we had dues, and we had bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, but we had the yearly officers, yearly dues. And the yearly charity, we always sponsored some charity,
mm-hmm.
or worked up a sum of money to give to some cause.
How would you say this Chinese Family Fellowship differed from the family associations?
Well, it differed from the family associations in that it was purely social and purely for the children. The platform, the entire aim was to foster friendship amongst our children, hoping that they will marry their own kind or marry within the group or something.
Uh-huh. Any other clubs or organizations that you joined?
Well, I belong to the Chinatown Optimist Club, which is a service club, you know, like Kiwanis, Rotary, Civitan,
uh-huh.
Lions.
How long ago was that started?
Oh, gee, that started back in 1957. I was not a charter member. I worked nights a lot in those days, and I didn't join until I've been a member about 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a regular service club.
Mm-hmm.
And has all kinds of members. Now it's originally they had a strong nucleus of Chinese members, but they've all dropped out or down to just dues paying,
mm-hmm.
and never showing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we have a work, we just have we have Jews, we have Chicanos, we have Americans, we have Chinese. It's really a world integrated club.
And, mm-hmm.
But all of we meet in Chinatown and we sponsor 3 or 4 events a year, but we're not an active and strong club. But I'm stubborn and I stay in there.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever join the family associations?
No, I've never belonged to any family associations.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of people who joined those
associations? Well, I guess there are because their parents did or something, and those are the associations that are fellowship, I guess, and business a lot. But and then they sponsor certain civic things, I imagine. But I know very little about them. I never belonged to them. I know about, I know that there were always associations in every town.
Mm-hmm.
And some clans are large and they have, but the Lukes are really a very small clan. We have a Luke association in Seattle, but it was really a very small organization, very small operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's defunct now.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the movie industry, you said you had bit parts.
Yeah.
That was pretty much 1951 to 56?
No, that was pretty much 1943, 44, 45, 46.
Mm-hmm.
Right through there, through the war, haphazard and scattered. I never gave up my main occupation. I just worked at it, took a day off or something.
Mm-hmm.
I never took it seriously.
Uh-huh. What were the wages for a day's work?
Well, at that time, I was never an extra. I was always a bit part. I always had the line to say. I was a speaking actor. And I think I started out about 125 a day, and I got as much as $200 a day.
Uh-huh.
They get a lot more today, I'm sure,
right,
with inflation. Even the extras get a lot more today.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you think, what did you think of the way Orientals were portrayed in movies before the war?
Well, the reason I never had much stomach for the movies, I was too close to it. I worked in a trade paper. I knew all the scuttlebutt. I knew all the personalities. It was no magic carpet for me. It was no Cinderella Wonderland. I knew how people climbed over bodies. I never cared for the movies. Not that I was afraid of being an actor. I had no problems there. I could always say my line. But I didn't like the way they treated the Chinese. The parts were very demeaning many times. And also, when they called you in for an interview, they lined you up like cattle, and some of the people interviewing were nicer than others, but some of them really just treated you like cattle, more or less, or a piece of furniture, bring in 6 chairs or something, and then we'll take the fat one on the left or the skinny one on the right. And I stood there and I said, now what am I, a college graduate in journalism, doing here in this? I don't have to do this. So after I got the part in Blood Alley, which didn't amount to a hoot, but they cut out most of my scenes, and I said goodbye movies, and I've never looked back.
Mm-hmm.
No regrets.
Mm-hmm. So you do feel that at times Chinese weren't portrayed accurately and were...
Well, yes, they were portrayed just like Step and Fetch it, and the others. They really, although there was never the there was certainly, it was the laundryman syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
They was just seemed to be stuck with that laundryman and cook syndrome. And even today, when you look at these commercials, a lot of them, when they relate to Chinese, he's always a cook or or in a laundry. You still see a laundryman commercial once in a while. Mm-hmm. Now, why don't they show the Chinese as he is in today's society? He's the doctor in the hospital. He's the surgeon someplace. He's the engineering specialist. But they never show that on TV. They still don't. Mm-hmm. They still have they show a few Chinese ambassadors or dignitaries or something. But really, they haven't given the Chinese American his due, his just due in portraying a commercial.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody ever protest before the war or
brought? No, I think there were some feeble protests on the part of the actors themselves. You know, they grumble about it. I wasn't that close to the actors.